Anya swung the weapon around, looking for targets. The last of the terrorists was being chopped down as she watched, oddly enough, by one of Eddie Kowkow's surrendered pirates, who had snatched up a fallen commando's blade and lustily engaged the hated Sword of the Faith swordsman. Two more pirates likewise stood shoulder to shoulder by their erstwhile captors. The other two had apparently died in the fighting. Anya covered with her rifle until several commandos took up stations on the walkway covering the hold. Others ran to Wira to help him up. He shrugged them off, moving quickly to the fallen Sharshak's side. Hevelin already knelt beside the young knight. His right arm hung to the deck, its midnight blue sleeve glistening with the blood that had soaked it and run down to turn his hand into a gory claw. Sharshak lay on his back with arms outstretched. His gray eyes stared sightlessly at the dark overhead. Through the paint on his face, his expression seemed to Anya to be one of peace. Hevelin raised his blacked-out face to meet the young sultan's eyes. His own blue eyes ran with tears. Slowly, he shook his head. Wira laid his hand upon the older knight's shoulder. Then, rising, he helped the older man to his feet. Realizing the commandos were in a twitchy frame of mind and might react poorly to a foreigner approaching their sultan with firearm in hand, Anya carefully laid down the Kalashnikov. Then she came down to join the tableau where the two men, Christian knight and Muslim sultan, stood facing each other across the body of a young man who had died to save a recent enemy. Both knights and commandos held themselves warily, alert for a fresh attack. But their eyes were turned outward. It was terrorist reinforcements they warded against. The victors' body language no longer showed distrust of one another. They had fought and won as comrades. It was a bond, Anya knew, since she shared it, as strong as family or nation or religion.
Anya, I'm glad you survived.
I am too. I mean, glad you survived. Both of you. And me. I only wish Sharshak had as well. He was a sweet boy.
Many good men have died tonight. Some of the best I called my enemies until mere moments ago.
Enemies no longer. I'm pleased to meet you, Sir Knight. I am Wira, Sultan of Rimba Perak.
I am called Hevelin. I am honored to take your hand in friendship.
Anya, I withdraw all objection to the Knights of the Risen Savior taking possession of this relic. Pending your professional judgment, of course, as I agreed. Hevelin, we may believe we serve different causes, but tonight we have fought together for good. That transcends all in my eyes. Perhaps I am naive.
I pray more of us might become naive in such a way.
Anya stood, looking from man to man, her eyes filled with tears. She blinked them sternly away.
I honor both of you. All of you. Since we have fought so hard and so many have died to secure it, what do you say we see what it is that's caused to all this destruction?
Wira looked to Hevelin. The old knight shrugged.
It would be churlish to resist the request under the circumstances. All here have earned the right to see what they sacrificed for.
Knights and commandos joined together to pry the lid off the yellow pine crate. Several climbed inside, shifting out enough of the straw-like packing material to reveal the plain gray metal lid of the coffin itself. It took four men, two from both sides, to lift the lid enough to slide aside so that all could see.
You can cover it when you're ready. I've seen enough. Hevelin? Cedric Millstone told me the Knights of the Risen Savior had prepared a special climate-conditioned vault to keep the artifact secure shortly before he himself was murdered by St. Clair's little helpers, I suppose. Is it true your order has such a facility in America?
It is, Miss Creed. There it shall stay safe, safer than it has been for the better part of a millennium, and hidden well away from public view.
Then I think that's best. I never thought I'd say it, but I don't believe the world is ready for something like this.
No sooner had the coffin been transferred to Wira's flagship, the Barani, along with the wounded and the surviving Knights of the Risen Savior, than Wira received a shocking encrypted transmission from his capital. Lestari had brought proof to the Sultan's security chief, Pernoma, of the identity of the traitor who had allowed the assassins into the palace grounds the night before. It was the Grand Vizier, Krishna, Wira's friend and supporter since childhood. From diaries found in his apartments, it seemed he was a far more devoutly fundamentalist Muslim than anyone had imagined. Why he had helped his young charge for so long was anyone's guess. It would remain so. Although several of his confederates in the palace had been rounded up, the aged Grand Vizier had produced a hidden car handgun and gone down fighting, taking two of Pernoma's men into death with him. Anya saw the news hit Wira like a blow to the gut, as they stood in the red-lit electronic wonderland of the Barani's high-tech bridge. Anya gratefully accepted the captain's offer of his cabin to sleep, after she had cleaned up. There would be no rest for Wira or his crew. Sultan Wira had professed himself unable to pardon the three surviving pirates who had helped fight the terrorists. After all, they were wanted by a number of nations for innumerable crimes. He ordered them confined to a cabin in the Sea Scorpion overnight. But Wira did not order the door to the compartment in which the pirates were confined locked, nor did he order it guarded. Nor did he order the several small boats bobbing alongside the pirate flagship to be watched. Naturally, by morning, the pirates were gone. So was one of the small powered craft. No one seemed the least bit concerned. Anya knew she wasn't. She stood on the afterdeck of the sleek 55-meter Barani, sipping a cup of steaming coffee with plenty of cream and sugar from the warship's galley. The sky was the color of the coffin. Ragged, pale clouds skimmed gray waves beneath the overcast. It was surprisingly cold. Anya wore a long gray sweater that came down to the thighs of her slacks. The sleeves covered her hands as they gripped the metal cup. A half-dozen wrecks, still drooling thin gray smoke, dotted the sea. One was a 100-foot Rimba Parak motor launch. The others were Red Hand junks. Their high sides, once painted gaudy scarlet and gold, with huge eyes staring from the bows, were blackened and streaked almost beyond recognition. The Sea Scorpion floated a quarter mile astern of the warship. Anya regarded it in the murky dawn. Anya turned as Wira approached. He wore a black pullover similar to hers, loose black sweatpants and black athletic shoes. His lush, blue-black hair was tied back in a neat queue from his tapering, handsome face.
Anya.
As if in a dream, Anya raised her arms, taking him in them. She barely managed to keep from spilling her coffee, but no thought of pulling away entered her mind. He kissed her once, lightly, on the lips. She shivered. He let go of her left hand, to her relief, since it held her cup. As if leading in a dance, he turned her to face aft, side by side with him.
I am proud of you. You know that, Anya? I'm proud of us. All of us. We have shown that courage and goodwill can triumph. Maybe I'm childish, but that encourages me. No matter how small or temporary it might be.
I've found, Wira, that there's not much point in worrying about the evil and suffering in the world. They'll always be there. If we dwelt on that every time we triumph, we might be too discouraged to try the next time.
Imagine how terrible a place the world would be if we didn't try.
That's true. Yet I can't get too comfortable with it.
How so?
Well, nobody wakes up in the morning and says, how can I be evil today? Except for maybe a few especially messed up adolescents. And serial killers, even sociopaths without any real sense of right or wrong, tend to come up with rationales for doing what they do. It often seems to me that the most horrible things are done by the people who are most passionately convinced that they're right. The good of humankind or of the planet can excuse a lot of bad behavior, it seems.
Like my commandos? Or our former foes, the Knights of the Risen Savior? Or you and me, for that matter?
No. Or, anyway, I like to think not. I mean, we fought for the right, for good. But you and the Knights fought passionately against one another, for good. And here's the real kicker. So do the Sword of the Faith terrorists, don't they? Even Cyrus St. Clair. He did what he did, thinking it was for a higher cause. I'm sure he died believing himself the greatest of patriots.
I find what you say uncomfortable, but I cannot refute it. So what can we do then to ensure that we do not commit great crimes in the name of the greater good?
Anya wrestled with that thought all the time. She ached to tell him, to confide. The truth, the whole truth. To be able to share her deepest secrets with this man, this cheerful, quick-minded friend, this strong and vulnerable leader. But she couldn't, and that was the problem. It had begun to gnaw at her belly last night, when she should have been deep in the sleep of the exhausted.
I wish I knew for certain. It seems pretty horribly unfair that one of the surest ways to turn into a monster is to try too hard to do the right thing.
I wonder, might the road to perdition be the easy route? The morally expedient route, accepting that the end justifies the means?
That could be. I've never accepted that. Maybe that's what saves my soul.
But don't let's be gloomy. You yourself said we needed to let ourselves have our wins. Let's celebrate this one.
You're right.
I know your business here is virtually concluded, Anya, but I find I'm not eager to see you go. Why don't you stay? Not professionally, as it were, as my guest.
Oh, that's very sweet. And I'd really, really like to.
I sense the unspoken but.
I can't. I have a life, a career, and a destiny. And it isn't here in Rimba Perak.
Well, perhaps it might help if I...
Please, don't even say it. Mira, I'm not what you need. You have your position to consider. Politics, national and regional, even global. I'm a nobody.
It's no longer the 14th century, Anya. Marriages are no longer arranged for dynastic purposes.
All the same, political considerations inform everything you do. They have to. I know how seriously you take your job. And anyway, you need someone who can be an adjunct for you.
I'd never ask a woman to be no more than an ornament. Even though you are highly ornamental.
You're sweet. But even so, you need a woman who can assist you. Serve as diplomat, administrator, problem solver.
Doesn't the ability to be my best bodyguard count?
How long could you keep from feeling resentment if you felt, however politically incorrect or regressive it might be, that you were hiding behind a woman's skirts?
Naturally, one likes to think better of oneself.
Mira, I care about you. Very much. I have great respect for you. I like you. And that's why I'm leaving as soon as we get the details wrapped up for dealing with the coffin.
Wira pressed his lips together. She could feel the emotional pain and turmoil beat from him like sunlight off waves. There was nothing she could say to make it any easier on him, to say nothing of her. All this time, the Barani had been bearing off to its starboard. Now it moved beam on to the drifting pirate flagship. A naval officer in short-sleeved whites appeared and saluted crisply to the black bill of his cap.
Awaiting your command, Your Majesty.
Wira turned, spanning to attention and returning the salute in a way the toughest drill instructor could find no fault with.
Carry on, Lieutenant. Execute the fire mission.
Sir!
Wira turned back to Anya. He held wide his arms.
Anya, since we have to part...
Anya fell into Wira's arms. Rockets streaked overhead, trailing tails of yellow flame garish against cloud towards the Sea Scorpion, which still held the bodies of Eddie Kowkow and his crew. As the shockwave of the distant blast rolled over Wira and Anya, their mouths met in a final farewell kiss.